This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. A very happy Saturday afternoon to you. 3:36. I'm John Hansen. Clouds rolling in downtown. I know a lot of you getting rain and storms as well as they continue to move off to the east. We'll keep you posted on those and break in if we have any information we have to bring you. But let's talk with Michael Raff right now, Director of Tax at Gordon Law Group. Michael, thanks for hopping out with us here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me in.
It's never a fun conversation to talk auditing, but it is a really important one. And I want to start off with this. I was one of the millions of Americans who I filed my taxes the first day I can. I kind of like doing it. Like, it's not too hard, so I can, you know, whatever, figure it out myself, sort of, I think. And I was going to get a return, and I was waiting, and I was waiting, and my friends were getting returns, and it was months and months and months, and I was convinced I was being audited. Are you getting calls from people that still have no idea what's happening?
Unfortunately, yeah. Our office is getting calls requesting, where's my refund? It's been 6 weeks, and I don't have my refund, and I wish I had a better answer for them. And I'm sorry, the IRS is still getting caught up from being in COVID delays for the last for 6 months last year, and they're getting caught up, but the information we have is, you know, they're pretty much all caught up from processing the 2019 returns. Hopefully the 2020 returns are getting fully processed. And did your refund wind up showing up?
It did.
Okay.
It did.
Okay, good. So just sit back and wait.
Okay. Wow, I feel like you're looking right at me when you say that. To chill out, John, and probably was the right thing to do. On the topic of getting audited, there are scams sometimes where people pretend that they're the IRS calling you saying, you're being audited. When will you know? I mean, how will you know if that is something you need to look into?
Sure, absolutely. And typically, the IRS is going to be sending you correspondence in the mail. They're going to be sending you something in writing. You'll know it's from the IRS saying that you're being audited, and they'll give you a certain amount of time to contact the examiner. And the Illinois Department of Revenue works in typically the same way. And those are the types of audits that we really see. And we can certainly jump right in there, you know, contacting the auditor so that the taxpayer never really has to speak with them or have that conversation.
That's good, because I wouldn't know the first thing to do. It must be a frightening experience for some people.
Absolutely. We see people in our office all the time that say, you know, I can't sleep since I got this notice in the mail. I cannot sleep. And so we'll tell a prospective client, you know, let that stress become our stress. We're going to reach out to the IRS. We're going to guide you through this. We're going to talk to you about all the issues that they're looking at, and we'll provide your explanation to the IRS or to the Illinois Department of Revenue, and we'll go from there. We'll at the end of the day, we'll either agree or we won't agree, and there's options to appeal at the end of the day if you don't agree.
If you're being audited, does that mean you've done something wrong?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No. The IRS has certain topics that they have to look into. There's certain reasons one could be audited. It does not mean that you've done something wrong, and we've closed many audits with the best thing we can, which is a no-change letter. We looked at everything. No changes being issued to the exam. Or, I suppose, in an even better instance, we're looking at this because in an audit, everything is open. And by the way, you're due a refund. We've done a few of those as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's a pretty good one. That's a good result to get. How far back can they go? Like, if I have already gotten returns for the last few years, am I, no matter what, safe? Or can they actually go back and look? Or if they audit you 1 year, they go, well, let's take a look back at previous years now.
No, that can happen. They can open up current or subsequent years. Typically, the statute of limitations is going to be 3 years. That's typically the audit time frame. There are certain instances where the IRS can go back to 6 years if they have a reasonable suspicion that you may have omitted about 25% of your income. There's also the possibility that if they believe there's fraud, they can really go back indefinitely. It's a no statute of limitations when there's suspected fraud, but that's very rare. Typically, we're talking about 3 years the IRS could go back.
What are some helpful tips to even avoid getting that phone call? Having said that they will do random checks and all that,
yes.
What can you do on the front end? I know we're not in immediate tax season now, but you and I were talking off the air about paying a self-employment tax, mm-hmm. things like that. What are some other tips you can give people?
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure you report. Let's start with this. Make sure you report your income that you received forms for. So if you receive a W-2, if you receive a 1099 from an employer or someone mm-hmm. you work for, make sure you report all the income, because the IRS actually has computer systems that will check to see, have you reported all the income? In addition, you always want to make sure that you're accurately reporting certain deductions, you know, your itemized deductions. Don't try and sneak in a few extra $1,000 of charitable contributions there. And if you are self-employed, make sure that you're keeping detailed records of expenses, and that if you are ever audited, you should be able to prove them out.
Yeah, and you mentioned about reporting all your income, because Michael, I imagine, again, we're talking with Michael, the Director of Tax from Gordon Law Group. I imagine there's sometimes you don't even think that something is income. And I imagine that that's what you guys do at Gordon Law Group is, you know, hey, let's look at dividends. Let's look at this. Let's look at that. I mean, I imagine that's where some people get into trouble.
Oh,
an innocent mistake.
Oh, absolutely. Innocent mistake. And then so if you get to a spot where there is an innocent mistake and maybe some income was admitted and you're having a conversation with a client like, yeah, this actually should have been taxed, or it should have been taxed this way. But uh-oh, here comes the 20% or the 40% penalty on top of interest associated with that as well. Well, that's really where we can come into, and we can request a abatement from the IRS for certain penalties, and we have a lot of those conversations as well. Like, yeah, it may have been an innocent mistake. They want to penalize you. Let's try and make sure that doesn't happen.
What can go wrong in an audit if you think you're going to do it by yourself?
Well,
I know that's an open question.
No, we always advise a prospective client, don't do this by yourself, because giving statements, you don't really know what you're saying or what's a potential trigger for the IRS. They have some questions they're going to ask you. They're looking for very specific things there. We're going to, you know, to the extent you have to give an interview, which you don't necessarily have to have, you can have a representative potentially do it in your place. You want to be, you know, in no way misrepresent anything to the IRS, but you still want to be careful and respond directly to the question. You want to make sure that if they're asking you for specific documents, that you provide the specific documents if it's a reasonable request, but you're not giving them your full library if you don't have to, if it wasn't requested. So you really want to make sure you're paying attention to the issues that are in every audit. Not every audit is going to be a full review line by line of your tax
return. Okay. That's interesting, because you would think, oh my gosh, I'm being audited. Here's my shoebox of receipts of everything.
Don't do that.
Right, because is it because you never know what else they may find, or is it just like, hey, as a general rule of thumb, in any law situation, do not give more than what has been asked?
I think that's a good rule. And also, just put the shoebox, don't shove a shoebox full of receipts at an auditor. That's not a good way to make a friendly auditor. So
yeah.
I don't recommend that either.
Well, that's also true. I didn't think about that, is that you don't want to burden the IRS with a maze that they have to go through. I mean, they are humans,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. The easier you make it on them, the easier they may make it on you.
And what sorts of things do you ask for right from the beginning? So someone comes to you, they say, I've been audited. What are you asking for first from them?
Of course. You know, the first thing we're going to want to do likely is see the correspondence they received from the IRS, know exactly what's being audited, and contact the auditor and get what's known as an information document request, so we can know what we need to be looking at. But as an attorney, we're also going to be talking to the clients. And what's unique about attorneys, when you're talking to someone who's being audited, you're still protected by the attorney-client privilege. Anything you discuss in the course of that conversation can never be compelled to be told. Doesn't mean the attorney could misrepresent anything to anyone, but that conversation between the attorney and the client is still legally privileged. It's a privilege that doesn't exist in all other capacities with an accountant or an enrolled agent who might be representing you otherwise. So that's why seeking an attorney is still, you know, in some instances, a really preferred idea.
I hadn't thought about that an accountant doesn't enjoy that privilege.
There's not the same privilege, no.
That's interesting. We've been talking about, I think the scenarios I've set up here are people that made a mistake, they were wrong about it. But you must deal with clients who maybe knowingly did something wrong, which I'm not trying to judge or anything, or they had a big mess up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're still able to help navigate some of those waters for people too, or how does that work?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, many prospective clients have done something or say, you know, I made a mistake here, made this mistake here. I have many clients sometimes that haven't filed returns for several years.
That's what we can
help them out.
That's what I was kind of going to get at, is I imagine there's people that are living a little bit with that guilt and that, I mean, look, you shouldn't do something wrong. You should file your taxes, of course, but who are we to judge? People make mistakes. People don't do things right all the time, 100% of the time. And that must be such a burden for them. So even if someone hasn't been audited, if they know that they potentially could be, for whatever reason, should they be giving you guys a call?
1,000% yes. There are programs in place both with the IRS and the Illinois Department of Revenue that if there are unfiled returns for several years, or if there are significantly omitted items of income and you need to get into compliance, there are things that can be done with either taxing authority. We have all the tools to help you, and I would highly recommend speaking with an attorney.
Is it better to be the ones to help them throughout it as opposed to the IRS calling you first?
In most instances, yes. And there are disclosure programs that offer either full amnesty or partial amnesty for different types of disclosures. And yes, the IRS and the Illinois Department of Revenue are almost always, in most circumstances, more lenient if you come to them as opposed to you being audited and then having to ask for that forgiveness.
We got to take a commercial break. I want to talk about cryptocurrency. I also want to talk about the IRS, how often they audit and how that may be changing. But in case someone's on the run, where can people reach you?
Absolutely. So my name is Michael Raff. I'm the director of tax over at the Gordon Law Group. And you can please reach out to us at 847-581-6951.
Right, give it one more time. Do it in that radio way. One more time, that number is
847-581-6951.
More with Michael Raff and the Gordon Law Group after this here on WGN. We're talking about all things taxes with Michael Raff, the director of tax at Gordon Law Group. And I'm tiptoeing into the subject of cryptocurrency. Ooh. Michael, yes, right? I feel like it needs a spooky sound anytime I start talking about it, because as much as I want to understand it, there's still avenues in which I don't. So let's talk about the tax implications for someone, because I think a lot of people this year, they saw Dogecoin going up. They jumped in without knowing that there's tax implications too.
Absolutely. Not only are there tax implications, but the IRS has put basically a question on the front page of your tax return this year. And when you filled out your taxes, you had to answer whether or not you've bought, sold, or otherwise acquired cryptocurrency in 2020.
And they're going after you. Well, we're not going after. They want to know. They're tracking this.
They want to know. They're tracking it because there are reporting requirements, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But they also want to know, you know, they're gearing up to make sure that the big players in the space aren't marking it no, and then they find them. You know, they very well may criminally prosecute some of these cases in the not-too-distant future.
Okay, so I have, like, some, like, minor stocks I go back and forth, and if I made a profit on them, they gave me a report at the end of the year, and I sold a stock for more than I bought it for. That's income. That makes sense to me. Are you saying that even if you went on like a Robinhood app and bought Dogecoin and you haven't sold it yet, which you probably missed a little bit of the boat, but that's a whole nother day. Even if you buy it, they want to know, or buy the stock in it.
If you're buying, okay. With respect to that question, if you are literally just bought, I believe you can answer that question no, according to the IRS FAQs. But if you disposed of any cryptocurrency, like a stock bought and sold, you have to report that, whether or not you made money, lost money, or whether or not you transferred or changed that specific cryptocurrency to a different cryptocurrency. Even if you never cashed out, you still need to report the transaction as if it were a stock.
And you were telling me also during the break that people can just get coins through different ways, through airdrops, through things.
Exactly, an airdrop. You hypothetically could just have a coin on an exchange and check your exchange and see another coin the next day. That's called an airdrop. That's reportable income. You need to report that on your taxes once you've recognized sort of that you have that ascension to wealth. You have to report that on your taxes.
Man, if I had anything to do with cryptocurrency, I would be calling you immediately, because these things change, right? And this is such a fluid situation. You want a professional that knows the latest about this stuff.
Absolutely. And I think you hit the nail on the head, which is that our firm is really good at reconciling, helping to reconcile that cryptocurrency. You mentioned a 1099-B form that you would get from selling on a Charles Schwab or Chase or wherever for stocks. It doesn't really exist for cryptocurrency, or not in a complete sense anyway. So our firm really does help with that reconciliation process. We're familiar with the latest and greatest techniques in cryptocurrency, but it's ever changing. And that's the thing, even within the last few years with DeFi and different airdrops, different programs, ICOs, all these things in the crypto landscape have evolved. Our firm is staying on top of it, but so is the IRS.
Yeah, I'm sweating nervously, and I know, and I own no cryptocurrency. So if you're out there, reach out to the Gordon Law Group. Give out that number one more time again.
Absolutely.
Too.
Again, it's 847-581-6951.
Very good. Okay, so what else is changing is there was a lot of talk in the pay-fors for the infrastructure bill, and part of the way we're going to pay for it, if it gets passed and signed by President Biden, is through the IRS doing more audits, or at least making more of an effort to find people who aren't paying taxes, right?
That's absolutely correct. You know, the IRS is really seeking a budget increase of about 10 to 15% for the first time. They've been losing employees. They've had agents that have been there forever that have been retiring. They have not been able to hire due to budget shortfalls, but they're finally getting some money. And that means they're hiring new revenue agents, the auditors. They're also going to be hiring new collections personnel. And collections was frozen for a good year with the pandemic, but it's back. The good part is they're also hiring what's known as more appeals officers, and they're the ones that sort of help to settle disputes if you don't agree with an exam. So they are hiring, which just means more audits, more collections.
Yeah, and part of me goes, well, good. People should pay their taxes. It's not fun for anyone. No one likes to do it, but it's a fair system. We should be doing it. But then in my head, I'm like, but I hope they don't call me. But the reality is that we might see more of an increase. Like, a lot of people that maybe don't earn all that much, they think, oh, I'm safe from an audit. May not be the case as you move forward. report anymore.
Sometimes the people that earn the least are actually the lowest hanging fruit for the IRS. There have been different studies that audits of lower income earners are actually more lucrative for the IRS because the high earners have the counsel and they have the accountants there to defend it. The low earners don't, and they get the collections that way. So, and certainly low earners also have, the IRS likes to audit what's known as the earned income tax credit, which goes to lower earners, as well as, you know, look at self-employed income and expenses. And we sort of see that a lot in the lower income community.
Well, that's mean. That's not very
doesn't,
nice.
It certainly doesn't seem fair, right?
Yeah. I was on the IRS's side till right now, you know? Let's talk about, you mentioned settlements and stuff like that. Absolutely. And I imagine you navigate those worlds that literally can save people many thousands of dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. We always talk about tax controversy being two-prong, at least I do, which is we have the assessment phase, that's audits, that's what we've talked about so far, but we also have collections. Once you go through an audit and you do have a balance due, whether or not you agreed with that balance or not, and now there is a balance due, the IRS is going to collect, you have to deal with the collection side of things. And collections can be, you can go through collections looking at different resolution options, which most typically are what's known as an installment agreement, where you pay something monthly, or kind of the holy grail of tax resolution, the offer and compromise. That is where you would settle the debt for less than you owe. And you hear the advertisements for pennies on the dollar and things like that. In some cases, sure, it's possible, but you really want to make sure you're speaking with someone who understands the system, understands what the IRS will really be looking at, and sort of probably have yourself pre-qualified by an attorney, someone knows what they're doing before going through an offer and compromise process, a settlement process with the IRS.
What's a temporary restraining order on collections? You can do that here in Illinois?
Oh, that's an Illinois collection rule. Basically, if you owe taxes to the Illinois Department of Revenue, you can petition an entity known as the Board of Appeals and request a temporary restraining order to prevent actions like levy. That would be the Illinois Department of Revenue going to a bank and taking your funds, or going to your employer and saying, well, this person owes us money, we want to take 5% of his paycheck or whatever it is to pay it. The Illinois Department of Revenue Board of Appeals is where you can go to seek a temporary restraining order to prevent the collection action.
And one other note you have here is about innocent spouse relief. What is that?
Innocent spouse, okay. Differs IRS or Illinois Department of Revenue. Most people think of it from the IRS perspective. It's basically, there's a few different prongs of innocent spouse. Broadly speaking, it would be, I filed a joint tax return with someone. I don't want to be held liable for X, Y, or Z reasons. Either I didn't know and had no reason to know that this item of income that was left off, I had anything to do with me. I just didn't know it. I was forced to sign this return under duress. I had no authority not to sign it. So there's different ways in which you can petition for innocent spouse relief. And it's different programs with Illinois and the IRS, but they're both available under certain circumstances.
So what I'm gathering here is there's a lot of ways to fight. There's a lot of ways to resolve things. And me, average John, does not know them. That's why we call professionals.
And that's why we're happy to help. We understand that it's very stressful when the IRS, you know, we find that IRS letterhead and it's not a check in the mail. So that's what we're there for. Tax controversy is a lot of what we do, and we're happy to help.
Yeah. Lawyers are there for you often on some of the worst days, and getting an audit in the mail would qualify as one of those stressful days, but it doesn't have to be as stressful. And I love the idea that you take the burden on, in that you guys look at it. Michael Raff from Gordon Law Group, thanks so much for stopping on by. And let's give out that number two more times.
847-581-6951. That's 847-581-6951.
You got a future radio career, man. There you go. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.